absolutely no way Pendergast could have survived and gotten away. No way. He should have stayed. He should have waited to the bitter end. He turned to Balfour. Look, is it at all possible someone could manage to get out? Extract themselves from this kind of mire? The man's blade-like face turned to him.
But you saw him go down, am I correct?
Yes, but I was so upset and the fogs were so thick. Maybe he could have gotten out.
Highly doubtful, said Balfour, staring at him with narrowed eyes. Unless, of course, you left him while he was still struggling.
No, I tried to rescue him, just as I said. But the thing is, my brother-in-law's incredibly resourceful. Just maybe.
He tried to inject a hopeful tone into his voice to cover up his panic.
Just maybe he got out. I want to think he got out.
Dr. Esterhazy, said Balfour, not unsympathetically, I'm afraid there isn't much hope. But you're right. We need to give that possibility serious consideration. Unfortunately, the remaining bloodhound is too traumatized to work, but we have two experts who can help. He turned. Mr. Grant, Mr. Chase.
The gamekeeper came over with another man, whom Esterhazy recognized as the head of the forensic team.
Yes, sir.
I'd like you both to examine the larger area around the bog here. I want you to look for any evidence, any at all, that the victim might have extracted himself and gone off. Search everywhere and cut for sign.
Yes, sir.
They disappeared into the darkness, just the beams of their flashlights remaining visible, stabbing about in the murk. Esterhazy waited in silence, the mists congealing into fog. Finally, the two men returned.
There's no sign, sir, Chase said. Of course, we've had very heavy rains that would have destroyed anything subtle. But a wounded man, shot, perhaps crawling, bleeding profusely, covered with mud. He would have left some evidence. It's not possible the man escaped the mire.
Balfour turned to Esterhazy.
There you have your answer.
Then he added,
I think we'll be winding up here. Dr. Esterhazy, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to remain in the area until the inquest.
He removed a handkerchief, dabbed at his running nose, put it away.
Do you understand?
Don't worry, said Esterhazy fervently. I fully intend to remain here until I learn exactly what happened to my dear brother-in-law.
Chapter 8. New York City. Dr. John Felder followed the police van as it jounced its way down the one-lane road that traversed Little Governor's Island. It was warm for an evening in early October, and the swampy marshland on either side was dotted with pools of mist. The trip south from Bedford Hills had taken just under an hour, and their destination now lay directly ahead. The van turned into a lane of long-dead chestnut trees, and Felder followed. Through the trees he could see the East River and the numberless silhouetted buildings of Manhattan's east side, so near and yet so very, very far. The van slowed, then stopped outside a tall wrought iron gate. A guard stepped out of the security booth beside it and walked up to the driver. He glanced at a clipboard the driver handed him, then nodded, returned to his booth, and opened the gate with the press of a button. As the two vehicles entered the compound, Felder glanced at a bronze plaque on the gate, Mount Mercy Hospital for the Criminally Insane. There had been some effort recently to change the name to something more modern, less stigmatizing, but the massive plaque looked like it was there to stay. The van pulled into a small cobbled parking area, and Felder stopped his Volvo beside it. He got out and stared up at the vast Gothic pile, its grand old windows now covered by bars. It had to be the most picturesque, not to mention unusual, asylum in all America. It had taken him a great deal of time and paperwork to arrange for the transfer, and he was not a little irritated that the man who had promised to reveal all about the prisoner in return for this favor, seemed to have disappeared from the face of the earth. His gaze quickly shifted from the building to the police van. A prison guard had gotten out of the passenger seat and walked to the rear doors, unlocking them with a key on a large key ring. A moment later, the doors opened, and a police officer, uniformed and armed with a shotgun, stepped out. While he waited, gun at the ready, the prison guard reached into the van to help out the other occupant. As Felder watched, a young woman in her early 20s stepped out into the evening air. She had dark hair, cut in a short, stylish bob, and her voice, when she thanked the orderly for his assistance, was low and even, its cadence reserved and antique. She was dressed in a prison uniform, and her wrists were handcuffed before her, but as she was led toward the entrance, her head was held high, and she walked with grace and dignity, her carriage erect. Felder joined the little group as they walked by.
"Dr. Felder," she said, nodding gravely at him, "a pleasure to see you again."
"Likewise, Constance," he replied. As they approached the front door, it was unlocked from within and opened by a fastidious-looking man wearing a white medical jacket over an expensive suit. "Good evening, Miss Green," he said in a calm, quiet voice, as if speaking to a child. "We've been expecting you." Constance gave a faint curtsy. "I'm Dr. Ostrom, and I'll be your attending physician here at Mount Mercy." The young woman inclined her head.
"A pleasure to make your acquaintance, Doctor. Please call me Constance."
They stepped into the waiting area. The air was warm and smelled faintly of disinfectant.
"I know your guardian, Aloysius Pendergast," Dr. Ostrom went on. "I'm very sorry we couldn't have brought you here sooner, but it took longer than expected to get the necessary paperwork cleared."
As Ostrom said this, his gaze briefly met Felder's. Felder knew that the room Constance was assigned at Mount Mercy had, after a thorough search, been very carefully cleaned, first with bleach, then antiseptic, and then repainted with 3 coats of oil-based paint. These measures were deemed necessary because the room's prior occupant had been notorious in her fondness for poisons.
"I'm most grateful for your attentions, Doctor," Constance said primly.
There was a brief wait while Dr. Ostrom signed the forms handed him by the prison guard. "You can remove the handcuffs now," Ostrom said, as he returned the clipboard. The guard complied. An orderly